Welcome to the This Is Money show in partnership with NS&I, your weekly roundup of the top personal finance, consumer and business stories that editor Simon Lambert and his team have been covering on their award-winning website. I'm your host, Georgie Frost, and as Simon is taking a very well-earned break somewhere hopefully fabulous, he's left proceedings in the very capable hands of personal finance editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce, who joined me today. Now, some of the items that they've been working on, hasta la vista, PPI. The time to claim will soon be terminated, so how do you go about it? How we wish we could say the same for ID fraud. Now scammers are coining in on insurance cons in record numbers. Lee the scam man Boyce thankfully has some of his top tips at the ready. Rachel gets fed up with ticking boxes, and I take issue with the phrase loyal customers. Also today, is it time we Brits broke up with credit cards? Our love of our plastic friends shows no signs of abating. Plus, is it time the practice of upping your card limit without asking is banned? And Rachel and Lee go head-to-head over the issue of cashback sites. All that and plenty more coming up. Don't forget, you can stay up to date with the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security, backed by HM Treasury.
But first, £27 billion paid out to 12 million people in compensation for missold PPI. That's so far. In fact, it's thought that's not even half the number who are owed money. And yet, we now have just 2 years left to get millions to claim. Now, the regulator has said, you've had long enough, and imposed a deadline, that's the 29th of August 2019, to the audible cheers of the city and the groans of consumer groups. So the FCA, they've launched a multi-million pound awareness campaign and enlisted the help of Arnold Schwarzenegger, no less. Sort of, actually. It's certainly memorable, I'll give them that.
Get to the crunch.
Make a decision. Surprise. Just pick one and roll with it. Come on!
You, sniffy man.
Make a decision. Do it now!
That's a good boy. You've at least made a decision under PPI, right?
Come on!
After the 29th of August 2019, you will no longer be able to make a PPI complaint.
Bye-byes for the PPI.
Quite. So you need to decide, yes, I want to make a PPI complaint, or no, I don't.
Make a decision. Do it now!
Visit the Financial Conduct Authority at fca.org.uk/PPI or call 0800 101 8800.
Come on!
Bye-bye for the PPI. You love that, didn't you, Lee? Just to give you some context, because obviously this is radio, the ad is set in a supermarket with shoppers trying to decide which products to buy when up pops the plastic head of Arnie on tank tread, naturally. So, look, this has been going on for yonkies years. Around 60 million policies sold over the past 30 years. Lee, Rachel, we've known about this mis-selling for a decade, right? The FCA, as was, started imposing fines, I believe, what was it, back in 2006? How is it that over half of the people who could claim haven't? But first, I've got to ask, what exactly is PPI? Now, the acronym is somewhat toxic now, I think, but in and of itself, used properly, not missold, etc., etc., it's not a bad product. Is that fair to say, Lee?
It is fair to say, because actually, in some circumstances, people actually used it. If they lost their job, for example, it actually helped with their credit repayments. But the trouble is, payment protection insurance, it was sold alongside loans, credit cards, mortgages, other credit. Sometimes it was even sold as a standalone product. And it was mainly, it came out in a sort of monthly premium, and a lot of people just didn't know they had it. So if you open one of those products, some banks chose to basically just not tell you that you'd had PPI on it. Some didn't make it clear that you had PPI, and others actually made you take it out in order to get the product. So if you wanted a certain credit card, they forced you into getting PPI as part of getting the credit card, right? So people were paying this money for it, and lots of people just would never need it or never use it. But used in the right way, if you lost your job or were made redundant, you had a high credit card bill or a loan bill, it would help bridge the gap.
How on earth, Rachel, just listening to Lee talking there, was that ever allowed to happen? And if it's just this product, surely there must be something else. Lee's giving me the eye there. Sure, how is that possible?
It's a really good question, Georgie, and one that we have been asking at This Is Money for decades. I mean, at the time that it was being sold, we, not me, were warning it was toxic and that at some point it would all blow up. And of course it did. And it does raise the question, what else is there? It raises, I think, really important questions about the whole banking model in general, that we are not charged for stuff that costs money to provide, and so banks have to find other ways of getting that money back. And it comes sometimes in the form in the past of mis-selling.
I imagine as well, the fact, if you take a look at the average commission on these products, was 67%. Mm-hmm. You can understand why salespeople were rather pressurised to get these out the door, as it were.
Well, yeah, it was great for the bottom line for banks, wasn't it? It was a great little ruse why it lasted to get this money in. But now they've suffered the consequences for a number of years of people claiming, you know, billions of pounds back. It's basically propped up the economy, hasn't it? At the end of the day, you know, people have received a lump payment from the people, bonus money.
I was going to ask, what happens to the car market?
Well, exactly. Well, it's already been sort of dipping since the PPI payments have been slowing down. But they're saying that this whole campaign, which, by the way, this Arnie thing is just... the head
you were loving
is the creepiest thing. It's so creepy. I don't know who came up with that, but I mean it's tens of millions of pounds they're throwing at this campaign. Yeah. I think something like 40 million quid or something.
But this is paid for by the big...
But it's paid for the bank. So if you're not paid for it, let's get Arnie in. Let's get, you know, Brad Pitt in. It doesn't matter, does it? Because, you know, the FCA aren't paying for it. They're getting getting the banks to pay for it, which is absolutely genius.
But when we say the banks are paying for it...
Yeah, who is?
Who are the banks, and does that not end up being a cost for us as well?
Also, though, Lee, you said the banks have been suffering, paying for this, et cetera, et cetera. And they're the ones, I assume, that have been lobbying the hardest for it, and that's why we've got one coming up. Mm. What do you think? A fair move?
Their argument has always been that it's so hard to make any sort of long-term decisions when you've got this hanging over you, and it's just time to draw the line. But half of people who are eligible to claim have not done so. The FCA did a study in October a couple of years ago where they found out that a quarter of people apparently had never heard of PPI.
What?
And of those who did, a quarter did not realise that there was a problem with it. I don't understand how this can happen. But if that is the case, and if there are people who still don't know about it, I think it's right that there's some kind of big independent campaign to raise awareness, something so bonkers that makes you sort of sit up and notice. But I don't really buy the argument of the banks that they need the kind of stability and certainty of not having to pay out anymore. It's their own fault they shouldn't have done it in the first place. And if people still have outstanding claims, then I don't know that they should be penalised for not having got their act together.
Yeah, if they're owed that money...
Then it's their money. And it is, as Lee says, I think it's a lovely little dividend to households. It's been great for cars. People have paid off a bit of debt. There have been some quarters when it has made a distinct impact on GDP growth. It has affected the number because people have been spending a bit more. So I'm happy to have that in the pockets of consumers versus shareholders of banks.
I've just picked my jaw up, though, off the desk after that stat about 25% of people haven't heard of it. I mean, they got a stage when I swear I was speaking to PPI firms on the phone, you know, the recorded messages, more than my mum.
Yeah, that would be surprising.
Which is a good point, because actually it's not going to be just the FCA that are launching a big campaign. You better believe that those 1,300 claims management companies that are registered are also going to be upping their game.
I was going to say, that survey must have been like undertaken in Timbuktu or somewhere, because A, the amount of times you get bombarded about make a PPI claim. I was listening to the radio, I don't listen to the radio that often actually, but I was listening to it the other day. Every third or fourth advert was for PPI claims. Have you claimed your PPI? There's a deadline. So all these claims firms are playing up on this deadline thing. Now, you know, there's a deadline, it's 2 years, you've got to get on it now. And people need to watch out for that, because if you have been missold PPI, there's a way better way than going through a claims management firm that are going to take a healthy slice of any money that you may be due back.
Or they take up to about 40%, don't they? But what can you do then? Give it to us, because I have a lot of people that come up to me and say, you know, it's too complicated. If all those people that could have claimed before didn't, there's a reason they didn't. Mm-hmm. Give it to us straightly.
I think the first thing you do? The first thing to not think that this is complex is by not thinking you're going to have to go and chase down loads of old statements and get all of this paperwork together and dozens and dozens and dozens of pages of statements and everything.
Because they're talking about 1990 to 2010 is the key period.
Exactly.
Who's
so it's a long time.
Stuff from
yeah,
1990?
Unless you've got a filing system that goes, you know, back a long way. And let's face it, banks only have to keep data on file for up to 6 years. That's the sort of minimum legal requirement. So a lot have 6 years worth of records, and that's that. So what the best thing to do is just ignore the claims firms, right? Because they're around for a reason, and they're bombarding people for a reason, because they're making big amounts of money and they know that the end game is coming soon, right? So come on to This Is Money /PPI. We've got some letter templates there. Print off the letter templates. The whole article there tells you from start to finish what to do. But you do need to kind of have a think back over what credit cards you might have had over the years, what loans, mortgages, all of your providers. Now, I know that it's not necessarily simple, but if you really have a bit of a think about it and you can sort of pin down who you were with roughly at what time.
You can look at your credit.
You can look at your credit score,
yeah.
And that goes back quite a long way. Mm. So that will rejig your memory. A lot of these things are free now, or free for 30 days. You sign up and then just make sure you cancel before it goes into a direct debit. And then you've got a list. That's it. You've got a golden list of companies that you may have been missold PPI by. The first thing you have to do is contact those lenders and those banks. You know, so you go to them first. Hopefully they'll do the right thing. If you have been missold PPI, they have reasons to believe you've been missold PPI, and they will pay out. If they don't, you take it to the financial ombudsman. And the uphold rate...
Is that with the template you say you go
with the template. Yeah. So there's a letter template. And as I say, the story goes into real depth on how to do it. But there's a great letter template that we've had for a number of years on the This Is Money website. We've had lots of readers get in touch saying how simple the process was, how clear the letter template is. It's just a Word document you print out at home and you send it off.
Okay, it seems rather speculative there, Lee, because if you can't find the paperwork, you don't know that you've bought PPI or that you've agreed to pay for this policy. And then there's the issue of, well, were you missold it? Are they just paying back anyone that had it? Because how do you prove you were missold it? Do you have to prove? Is the onus on you to prove it?
Well, there are different categories of mis-selling that you might fall into, but those have just been broadened over the past couple of years as well. So if you could show that at the time at which you were sold it, you were unemployed or you were self-employed, so you weren't able to use it, or if you were never told about it, that you had it. But now there's this other one that's come in, which has come out of a Supreme Court ruling on a woman whose name was Pleven. And she was told the commission that she had paid unwittingly was 67%.
Beg your pardon, 71.8%. The average commission is 67%.
Yes. While she knew that she was paying for it, she did not realise that such a high proportion was going only on the commission. And they said that that wasn't right. And if you paid more than 50% commission, then you are also entitled. So then that kind of opens the floodgates for lots of people who may have had claims rejected in the past who now might be eligible. So just because you have done what you think you ought to have done and put in your claim for missold PPI and had it rejected does not mean that you shouldn't go back and try to do it again. You never know.
That Pleven case is an interesting one because that actually falls under the Consumer Rights Act, doesn't it? So something slightly different. So it's about fairness, but it means that those 2.4 million people, of which I'm sort of one of them, that were rejected, can then go back.
Exactly.
Even if you knew about PPI, you can still get some money, which then begs the question, if you go back and say this case, which is only relatively recently in the long timeline of PPI, has come about, is 2 years really enough time? Because there's a backlog that's going to happen with millions of people.
Yeah, you can see it now already, can't you? It's going to put a real strain on the departments of these places that are having to deal with it, the Financial Ombudsman Service. Would I put my neck on the line and say there might be an extension? Well, if anything's to go by in this financial world, I would not be surprised. It all depends. Let's face it, we've got data saying that a quarter of people don't even know what PPI, never heard of it, right? So if there's now a deadline coming up, you know what it's like with any kind of deadline. People will leave it to the very last minute. Go, oh yeah, that's what I was meant to do. You know, I've got 2 months to do it. Let's get it in, and it'll just be like an absolute rush. So, what I would suggest if people haven't put a claim in or looking at this Plevin case and going, do you know what, actually, I should put a case in again, I would say don't leave it too late. Honestly, like, don't leave it to the last minute because you are going to be in that backlog.
I'm also a little bit worried. And one final point in this, because you mentioned the financial ombudsman. So, if you get turned down by your bank, you can go there. It's independent. It's free. But the worry about that is if you have any other issue that you may want to take to the financial ombudsman, can you wait a couple of years? Because it's probably not going to get dealt with. I mean, are they hiring more staff at the moment to deal with this?
Well, I did a big investigation about this a couple of months ago because there's quite a lot of staff unrest at the ombudsman at the moment. There's been a lot of jigging around, but people aren't happy with management. And a lot of people have actually, I believe a few people have been let go from the whole PPI part of it because they weren't getting as many cases as they were at the peak a couple of years ago. But they have a separate department, so I don't think it gets mixed up with, but they might shift personnel around behind the scenes, which could then put a strain on other banking issues, other, you know, complaints that people take to them.
I didn't mean don't go to the financial ombudsman if you have an issue. No, please do.
They give you a time frame. I think it's 8 weeks or something, and they get back to you.
Fantastic. Well, that's PPI hopefully sorted. If you have any issues, do go online to This Is Money. You've got all the information.
Yeah, /PPI.
Thank you very much. But don't get complacent, because there are plenty of other ways you can lose money when it comes to insurance, from sticking to your old provider to becoming a victim of fraud, which is where we shall land now. Now, there are some rather worrying stats that have come out showing the scale of insurance ID theft. It's actually become the fastest growing type of identity fraud in the UK. Just looking from January to June 2016, there were 20 cases. Now, fast forward to the same period this year, we're talking over 2,000. So firstly, we know about ID fraud, but what exactly, and Lee, you are the scam man, Boyce, what exactly is insurance identity theft? Because also there's not just one way that scammers can get you here.
No, so I think the first thing to point out on these stats is that it is the fastest growing fraud by percentage terms, but it's gone from a very small number to obviously a bigger number, so that makes it look like it's grown massive. But it has grown massively. And Rachel actually wrote the story last week, and we were talking about it last week, because we just thought, what on earth is insurance fraud? So this data came out of all the different frauds that, you know, we're familiar with, but insurance fraud sort of stood out. It had this big percentage increase, and we just thought, what on earth is this? And it didn't explain it. Rachel dug around to actually find out what this insurance fraud is. Basically, what it is if someone acts almost like a broker, like a fake broker, and then they fraudulently make insurance for you. So you might think you've got car cover, you know, you bought it from some geezer down the pub or something, and it's not legitimate. And then you go, well, where'd you buy it from the pub? That sounds bizarre, but people do it.
All right, so Rachel, you're going to go right back to the start. What is going on? Where is the weak link in the chain that someone is getting insurance from you? How are they finding this out?
I know, that's what we thought. It just seemed so strange. It made sense that you would steal someone's identity to open bank accounts so that you could get credit cards in their name or loans or buy stuff from their accounts. But why on earth would anyone bother to take out insurance in someone else's name? The reason you would do it is some people have much lower premiums. Maybe they live in the part of a country where the risk of burglary is lower or something like that. They'll piece together, as with any other type of identity fraud, enough information about you to be able to claim that they are you. Then they will take out an insurance product in your name using all of your details, your home address or your car license plate or whatever it is that they need to use. They will do all of this without your knowing, and then they will take this product, doctor it so that it's no longer in your name, and sell it on to someone else as, look, here we are, here is a cheaper insurance product for you to buy. Then I looked on the ABI had advice about not buying insurance products down the pub. Obviously.
They hired Arnie on a campaign to highlight this practice.
And there are, apparently there is a register of insurance providers and brokers that you can always check to make sure that you are getting the real product. Because what can happen is, if you buy one of these knockoff insurance products that you don't realise at the time is not valid and in your name, if you are in an accident or something like that and go and claim, phone up the insurance provider and they have no record of you, you are in trouble. So there's trouble for that victim. The other victim, of course, is this person who has had an insurance product taken out in their name without them realising it. And then if there is a claim or something like that, then they end up perhaps only then discovering that this fraud had occurred in the first place.
There's so many issues in this story, so many issues here. I mean, we're talking about ID theft going up generally, but also talking about insurance premiums going up generally. So I suppose it does show that people who want to get covered are desperately trying to find something that's not so expensive. There was
some data out, I think, last week or the week before, showing there's been a massive rise in uninsured drivers. People are just shunning car insurance because it's become so expensive. I think, you know, we did a story again maybe about a month ago saying that car insurance costs are actually the most expensive, or are about to become the most expensive they've ever been. Crazy money to get insured. And unfortunately, you know, some people will then go, oh, that's a lot of money, I'll just drive uninsured, which is not somewhere where you'd want to be.
Lee, before we move on, I did mention there that ID theft generally is going up. Mm. What can you do? Give us some of your top tips, please.
Well, definitely make sure that if you get bank statements and credit card statements and all those sort of things, get a shredder. Just get a shredder, shred it all. Don't leave any kind of traces around. You may think you put it out in the recycle bin and people don't go through your bin, but that's how a lot of ID theft actually happens. And make sure you stay safe online as well. You know, don't click on some of these dodgy emails that go around. I'm noticing loads of this lately, Facebook and WhatsApp, just lots of like fake adverts coming around. Click on one of those and you're going to get all sorts of details stolen. And online, just make sure you keep changing passwords and make sure that your online sort of safety net is as strong as it would be in, you know, the non-virtual world. The more you can do to keep those sort of details outside of hands like that, the less likely you are to become a victim.
Thank you very much, Lee.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security, backed by HM Treasury.
Right, now, Lee, Rachel, I'm reading a lot about loyal customers being ripped off when it comes to their bills. We'll talk about energy firms overcharging billions shortly. But this is something that really annoys me, and I just want to ask you about it, right? It's the word loyal. What we mean is those who don't switch regularly, right? What we mean is busy people, those people with lives, people who forget to do the million and one financial things that we're all supposed to do. But does anyone actually have an emotional connection enough with their insurance provider or their energy firm that we can actually use this word loyal anymore? And I'm wondering, does it make us feel like victims who are totally out of control, when actually there are things that we can do? We can move. Because surely this is just business now. Is it time to change the rhetoric and take control? Or am I being over pedantic here a little bit?
I agree that it is an emotive word. The alternative is lazy.
It's not lazy. Busy. Busy. Okay. We're busy. We're confused. There's loads of things going on in our lives. I don't think we're lazy either.
But I think that people do still have... I've got a friend. He's in his early 80s. He's been with the AA since basically forever, and then discovered that he was overpaying on his car insurance by something like £1,000 a year, because that's what a lot of companies do, is if they think, well, hang on a minute, they just accepted this last premium rise last year, let's do it again. And they try it on and again until you are paying much more than you need to. Except I read, I think an FCA report suggested that they will do this to a certain point, but there are a couple of like price triggers at which we do stand back and say, hang on a minute, that's too much money, about £1,000. So it might end up tailing off around 900 something pounds instead. But I don't think he's the only one who thought, but I'm with the AA. The AA are reliable. I've been with them all my life. Why would they try to rip me off? I don't think he can be the only one to do that. And I think that a lot of people still have not cottoned on to the notion that they will be ripped off by companies with which they have formed some kind of connection over many years. The same thing happens with British Gas. Why would British Gas rip me off?
But the way we're talking about it, you've got images of them all sat round there with their long fingers going, how can we rip off our customers this week? It personalises it. Should we just not get the attitude that this is business, right? This is business, so as such, I'm going to treat it like that. I'm going to be cold, hard, and I'm going to switch, I'm going to move and go somewhere else. and save myself money, because this is all about money. It's not about loyalty. It's not about emotion. It's not about people sitting around thinking of ways to rip off 80-year-old people, is it?
But Georgie, what you've got to remember is a lot of this has happened in the last sort of decade, where there's been a real shift to comparison websites online, and a lot of people still don't use the internet. You know, okay, you know, that might sound daft, but some people don't feel comfortable doing things like this on the internet, and they're the sort of customers that some of these firms are really sort of looking to play on, in my opinion. And the thing is, if for years and years and years you've been with the AA and you're getting documents through for your car insurance and it's just nudged up a little bit, and you haven't got last year's price to sort of at hand, so you don't know how much you paid last year, you probably go, well, you know, they've never done anything to annoy me. You know, if you have had to do a claim or something, perhaps you've just stayed with them because they've done something right. Maybe like the customer service. Maybe you do dislike the brand. Mm. And so some people will just stick with it. I mean, another example is my mum was with Saga for a number of years in her car insurance. And she said, showed me a car renewal. And I looked at it and I thought, well, you've had no claims. That seems really quite high. You know, have you put it through a comparison website? And she was, oh, no, I'll do that. I think she ended up, it was like £500 cheaper or something. You know, phoned Saga up and said, I've done this online comparison. I'm happy to stay with you guys if you can match it. And they just matched it.
Yeah.
You know, that's an incredible amount of leeway, isn't it? But imagine how many of those people haven't done that. And that's what they're playing on. And, you know, you could say, well, people should be out there switching, but some people just still don't do that. You know, you can have all of these ads for comparison websites and everything, but some people just don't want to go online.
I agree. Don't want to go online, don't know how to do it. And you know what? If you're going to do a good deed for the day, why don't you speak to someone? Perhaps it's, you know, an elderly relative,
exactly,
perhaps it's someone who doesn't like going online, and advise them to do this. And like you said, you don't actually have to go through comparison websites. You can actually just take a look at them, phone up your provider and say, look, I like you. I like you. I've always liked you. However, I don't like what you're doing in terms of my bills. Get it down.
And I think it's always the case that it's the cruelest kind of cross-subsidisation, whereby those who are savvy, have an internet access, maybe younger, perhaps more affluent, get the cheapest bills, and they are subsidised by those who are not. Perhaps they're elderly, they don't understand how these things work so much, and they end up paying more.
But my issue, and we're going back to the loyalty thing, is there are things that we can do. Look, we'd love things to be more transparent. We would love the government to get its act together on some of this, and we'd love businesses to behave in a moral, ethical way. But right now, they are not. And this is where we are at. So do we not need to empower people to take the mettle themselves?
Yeah, without a doubt. Of course, that is what should happen. But also, a few companies that actually started to reward people's loyalty might actually have a more likely chance to go, do you know what? I've heard so-and-so, you know, you stay with them for a little while and actually they treat you quite fairly. But I just don't really think, especially insurers, I don't think any of them have really gone for that, because it's probably not profitable. It probably squeezed their profits, and that's the thing.
There's definitely a niche for niceness. Mine did it. My home insurance provider, I got my a renewal notice, and I got myself ready for my annual fight, and it had gone down and I hadn't even asked for it, and I was so happy with them. I still, you know, every time I happen to think about Aviva, I think about them with a slightly happier glow than I might otherwise.
Customer service, eh? What
nice,
about that?
It?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So niceness premium.
But it can't, be the answer for absolutely every single utility, anything that we have to buy at the moment. The answer is always, we have to shop round every year, otherwise we're going to be ripped off. I don't know how sustainable that is as a business model. I mean, the only other things that are mooted as alternatives are greater transparency about pricing, which I think can help. If you know how much you're being ripped off by, perhaps you're more likely to get angry about it. And then the only other thing is regulation, and that's deeply controversial at the moment.
State ownership.
We could just bring it all back in, but that's pretty controversial.
It was, and actually an investigation by your sister publication, The Mail on Sunday, has been speaking to hundreds of customers who are just simply fed up, absolutely fed. And you can understand this. Look, you know, you're paying for a cover you have at the moment or you've had, and you're watching it being routinely offered to new customers at a far cheaper price. That's what's so annoying. It's the same product being offered to new people at a cheaper thing. And it's not just insurance. Absolutely it's not. But some of the worst offenders, though, Lee, are marketing themselves as elderly friendly.
Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. Well, I was speaking about Saga just then. They're definitely one of those that I'd put in that category, RIAS or another one. You know, people think, well, they're only for over 50, so that means, you know, because I've got years experience of driving, or, you know, I've been in this home for a long time, they automatically think they're a cuddly firm that are going to be acting in your best interest, and actually they're not. And it's even more important, I would say, that if you are with a firm like that, is to shop around. And if you don't feel comfortable on the internet, get a relative to do it for you, or show you how to do it.
Good deed for the day.
Exactly. I think that's the best advice you can give, really.
All right, Lee, just a quick one, though, because we've said don't get mad, switch. So before we get on to our favourite whipping bills, see what I did there, energy. Lee, 2-minute guide to switching. How do you do it? Who should do it? What are the benefits? What are the risks? Go.
Let's talk about online first, right? So if you're going to do energy bills, you go onto a comparison website, you type in your postcode, you look at the different deals, compare that to your bill now. All you have to do is type in your postcode and the sort of your usage. You have a look at these offers, you confirm. You should be switched within 2 or 3 weeks. You'll have no kind of cutoff. I think some people get a bit nervous that their energy or electricity or gas is going to get cut off. It's not the case. They have to guarantee that it's going to be switched. You have a cooling off period, and then if you're not happy, you switch somewhere else. If you're happy, you stay with it. Now, if you're not happy going online, a lot of these comparison websites actually do offer a phone number where you can give the same details over the phone and they'll do it for you. So that's quite a good service for people that don't like to go online and only think you can go online to do this stuff. It's a very similar situation for things like car insurance and home insurance. If you get your documents through, a couple of clicks on a comparison website, all you're probably going to need is your address, your registration plate, and you just compare it. What I will say, and one warning, word of caution for something like that, is make sure that you're getting the same level of cover. So you might see that something's cheaper, but it might not cover you for the same amount of what you've got now. So maybe it'll only be £30,000 of possessions rather than £50,000. They're the little things you need to make sure that you click and do, you know, the same level as what you've got now. Stuff like broadband. Broadband is a classic example of where they give offers only to new customers. And that is really frustrating because it gets to 12 to 18 months and you're like, hey, wait a minute, you've pumped the bill up by 15 quid a month, but this is now, you know, 20 quid a month less for other customers. It's exactly the same broadband, probably. It's not, you know, the quality of broadband is probably not going to be any different from year to year. So you need to make sure that you go, type in your postcode again, make sure you're going to get the same speeds. And if you've got a lot of competition in the area, so a lot of places don't get Virgin, for example, but if you're in a place that has a lot of competition, you tend to see they're going to have more offers. You might be somewhere more rural, so it might be a little bit more difficult. But just shop around and have a look around. It's definitely one of those things that you should do on a regular basis if you can. If you're not, again, if you're not happy on a computer, there are ways to do this on the telephone. Or get a relative to do it. You get a relative to either do it on your behalf or just sit, look over their shoulder and see what they're doing and see what kind of deals come up. And I tell you what, if you can save yourself a few hundred quid every year, it's more than worth it.
Lee, Rach, help me out here. I'm just going off topic a little bit now because we're going to talk about energy firms. And I'm reading here that research suggesting the big six energy firms have made over 7 billion from those customers who don't switch regularly. So that's according to the green energy firm Bulb. It puts a figure on this. And this is because they offer these cut price rates to entice you in and then they push up the charges 1 or 2 years later. But you're talking there about getting relatives, as do I. I say it all the time. Speak to relatives. My mum has been with British Gas for 34 years. She's so ashamed at how much she's paying. She won't even and tell me how much it is. So the only way I can get her to switch is by offering to pay that bill for her. So I have landed myself with a huge bill for the fact that my mum will not switch. How can you persuade these people who are, and I count my dear mother among them, a very intellectual doctor who's just a little bit nervous and doesn't want to do anything else online than her Sainsbury's shopping. That's it, because she hears one story about someone being a victim of fraud. She hears one story about the fact that you get cut off from your energy. One story she doesn't want to know. How do I persuade her without having to pay a lot of money? Because, Lee, Rachel, I'm really nervous about having to pay her bill.
I think there's three things you could do, Georgie. I would definitely quote this £7 billion figure and say, hey, mum, you're in this £7 billion figure because you haven't switched for 34 years. I would say, B, you're going to get exactly the same standard of electricity and gas switching provider. It's not like you get a better bit of electricity and gas. It's all the same thing. And I'll say, see, mum, if I can save you money, that gap in between, I'll take you on holiday.
Do I still have to pay for it then?
Well, no, because you're saving that. Your mum would have paid that, but now she's paying that, so she can take you.
Now I feel guilty, then. I feel like I should. She's a pensioner. All right, then. Thank you very much. But I do want to talk about this big six energy firms. Tell us a little bit more about that. 7 billion. A huge amount of money over 5 years.
It's outrageous, isn't it? So this is talking about the incumbent providers who, when you've been with them for quite a while, your bills start to gradually rise and rise and rise until suddenly it is quite a lot. A lot of the smaller providers do tend to offer better rates because they have to prove themselves. And one of the ways that they do that is to make sure that they are in top of the Best Buy tables, so some of the cheapest ones on the market. I think there's sometimes a premium attached to being one of the newer ones. If you're looking on a comparison website and there's one that you've never heard of, and then it's alongside one that you have, if you are a cautious switcher, you may go for the one that you know already. So the one that you might not know, the newer ones, have to make it worth your while. And a lot of them actually provide better customer service because they're smaller. Mm. It's all about proportion of customers to the size of the company. But if they manage it well, which a lot of them have done, then they tend to offer better customer service. And they're more keen to keep you as a customer because they know if you're with one of the smaller ones, you are inherently probably a switcher. So they have to every year prove themselves to you. So 7 billion off Gem came up with something similar a couple of years ago. It seems unsustainable.
One reader, though, I believe it's your publication, posed the question, and we're coming a bit full circle here, why, if this is so unjust, Theresa May talked about this injustice of energy firms ripping off poor customers, and we're being overcharged by 7 billion, can't we have a PPI-style payback? Lee sneering.
Well,
there.
I was going to say, you haven't really been missold it, have you? I mean, at the end of the day, it was your responsibility to check your bill, and if you were happy with the bill and you paid the bill, then you've paid the bill. You were happy with that service, you were happy with that electricity and gas. You didn't think to question it and look elsewhere. So if you started blanket PPI and everything, I mean, blimey, I think the country would be bankrupt in about 2 years. That's my personal opinion.
Fair enough, fair enough. Okay, we're going to move away from switching, energy, insurance and the like onto something else that really annoys me. It's one of those shows. It's one of those shows. It's been a while. I've been on holiday and I'm back with gusto. This is credit card companies upping your limit without you asking. Now, if this wasn't bad enough, don't you find they always present it in a way that's like, yeah, you've won the lottery, well done you. I mean, this happened to me recently with a figure on a card that I never actually used. It went from 7,000 to 12,000. But at least this time I could stop it on the phone and actually thought, I'll get rid of the card. But when Lloyds did this to me a couple of years back, they made me go in branch if I wanted to change it. Good luck in finding a branch. But this is at a time when households spent a record 16.6 billion on credit cards last month. And Citizens Advice say it is those struggling financially who are seeing this practice of upping without them asking happen the most. Are banks bordering on the reckless?
It comes down to the same kind of question. Who has responsibility here? Is it ours for keeping our spending in check or not being ripped off or making sure that we're shopping around? Or is there some kind of duty on the provider as well? What it does do, though, I think, is benchmarks in a way that is really unhealthy. So if your credit limit goes up, then you might not think that's an invitation to spend right up to that last penny, but the amount of money in which you are in debt might seem more reasonable if you have a higher limit. There's all sorts of benchmarking to sort of normalise our expectations of spending and what we think other people might be spending as well. So when you're told that there's a minimum payment of, say, £5, it's not because they're nice and they don't want you to have to pay it back, or £5 is based on anything particularly scientific or connected to anything, but it's just so that you think, £5, that's a normal amount of money to have to pay back every month, but it's an amount that will keep you in debt for the rest of your life. So all of these sort of numbers that they assign to you, your credit limit, your minimum payment charges, are not necessarily in your interests. They are in the business of making money from lending you money.
Exactly. There's got to be a reason why they're upping this.
And exactly. They have to do it. And it's not just to be ever so nice to you so that if suddenly you think, hang on a minute, I really want to buy that thing, but it's more than £7,000. Wait a minute.
Thank goodness my bank just upped it to 5,000. Exactly. But there are examples there, and we can go into psychology or behavioural economics or anything. When you think about overdrafts and people living in their overdrafts, you get used to it, don't you? They say when you get a pay rise, you just learn to spend a bit more. No, you do. You exist within it, right?
Yeah, it's so true. But this, for me, is one of those things. It irks me as well, Georgie, because I've had it in the past where the credit card limit's gone up. I've not asked for it. And you're thinking, well, in a way, it's kind of like, oh, it's nice, you know, I'm credit worthy. They're thinking, yeah, we can bang you up a bit. On the other hand, I was like, that's really quite reckless. And I don't like that at all. And actually, I cancelled that credit card. I was actually that incensed by it. I cancelled the credit card because I thought, you are just encouraging me to get more and more in debt. They're saying that it's 12% of people have had their credit limit put higher without the mask, and I've got a feeling it might even be higher than that, you know. And let's face it, credit card bill in this country is going up and up and up and up. It's ticking over £60 billion now. That is an incredible amount of money. And at a time, this is the advice I'd give at the moment to people, right? Savings rates. We spoke about it for months now. The rates are so low. And if you don't feel like putting away money for savings, just start chipping away at debt. If you've got a credit card debt, that is the best thing you can do at the moment. Just chip away from it. Avoid that plastic. Cut it up. Start making a plan. Get out of it. There's loads of 0% balance transfer cards. Even if you've got to transfer over to them, pay it off gradually. And just got to think of it almost like a personal loan. Shifting over £3,000 of debt from a credit card that's banging you with 20% interest onto a 0% balance transfer card. Let's say you can get one for 30 months. You just work out £3,000 divided by 30. How much, you know, is that going to work out at? Can I afford that? And then pay it off slowly, and you've learned your lesson. But people won't do that. And
this
I know,
isn't a
but
choice for a lot of people, though, whether they're going to save or they're going to pay off. A lot of people are using this credit cards and
but
talking
that's
of paying
Georgie,
bills.
That is, but that's the worry, isn't it? Because, you know, if we start seeing the cost of living going up some more, if we do, and eventually we see interest rates going up and mortgage bills going up and all that sort of stuff, I mean, that £60 billion, that's all I can say. I mean, that is an incredible amount of money for such a small nation.
All right, well, talking about getting things you don't want unless you make the effort, Rachel, you have turned your attention to tick boxes. Tell us more.
It sounds really petty, doesn't it? And in a sense, it is a little bit, but it makes me angry. And when you're filling out a form for something, an application often is online, and it asks you whether you would like to receive special offers and things, and whether you would like to receive those both from the party from which you're buying something, but also from its special partners or third-party providers. I don't want any of that. And even when I think I do, I probably don't, because the truth is, when I get all of those special offers in, they're tempting. So I've really done a good old purge the past year, and I get no special offers because then I'm not tempted. But what annoys me is how many boxes you have to tick not to get this stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to opt out of it. And sometimes there are rules around this, but often I find, even so, these tick boxes are small and they're confusing. So I had one, the one that really rattled me a couple of weeks ago was I applied for a rail card. And there were 8 boxes that I had to tick to not get anything. One was for post, one was for email, one was for text message.
Yeah.
That, and then there was another one for third-party texts. So I had to tick all of those, but then I had to leave the last of the 8 blank. 7 said, please tick here if you do not. And then the last one said, please tick here if you do.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
what
when
annoys me.
When you're on a roll and you've ticked all the others, and then you have to go, and stop, because if you don't do the last one, then you do get spammed with all sorts of nonsense. And it's not just that it's taking the mickey and then it's irritating and that you end up with all sorts of spammy stuff. But the other thing that kind of worries me more than anything is, as we've been talking about, we've got huge problems with identity theft and with cybersecurity issues. And every single time that you say, okay, please take all of my personal data, my telephone number, email address, date of birth, and put it on your database, well, maybe every provider to which you give that information and agree to, for it to be shared again and again, is putting it on a nice, safe place and a lovely network, and it's all well protected and no one has access to it who shouldn't do. But the fact is, we do have huge problems all the time with data breaches, and I just feel like every single time my information goes on another database, it exposes me to another danger of identity theft or whatever it is. Now, if I want to be on that database, fair enough, that's a risk I'm willing to take, but I don't want it on a million different databases I don't want to be in the first place, that could be out there on the dark web with people buying it waiting to defraud me. I think it's more of a serious issue than just a bit of an irritation with the tick boxes.
Lee, nodding along.
I agree with all of it. It annoys me so much, because some websites, they say tick here, you know, to not be part of it, or don't tick here. And you kind of, as Rachel says, you get in a role and then you kind of get lethargic, and you don't know if you're meant to be ticking it or not ticking it. And I'm sure, I'm almost positive that in the past that I've ticked not to receive marketing materials.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've received marketing materials. So are some firms completely just ignoring the fact that I don't want to be bombarded with absolute rubbish? And I agree with every word Rachel says about it. It is a real minefield of an area, and it's horrible.
Am I right in thinking, though, there's going to be new regulation coming in from the EU in the form of the GDPR in May next year that's going to make this a lot harder for marketing people? Is that fair?
So there are already regulations from the Information Commissioner's Office that say you're not supposed to do those sneaky things like tick this, then don't tick that, and the boxes aren't supposed to be small, but it still happens. And yes, there are regulations coming in from the EU next year, and they should beef things up even more. And the companies who will really have to think about it most, I think, are small companies.
Mm.
Who larger companies will have sort of information data protection officers and all sorts, but smaller companies who just take your details, you know, stick on your database for your contact information or to give you information, special office or whatever, they will have all sorts of new regulations that they have to look into as well.
And the fines will be huge if they don't get this right.
And there are, that's it. I mean, we haven't quite seen it yet, but fines for all these sorts of data things are being ramped up because it's being seen as the significant issue that it is. I would like to think that that would change absolutely everything. It will never be a problem again. But these things take time to bed in, I think, and there are smaller companies involved who might not have the infrastructure to implement it straight away. So I would say, as it's our responsibilities to switch and empower ourselves that way.
Yes, exactly.
So it is as well to when you think that you're being unfairly treated, or it's so difficult, isn't it, when these things are niggles, you know, they're not deal breakers. Time is short, and if you just see it on a form, it can be hard to take time out to bother to do anything. But just whatever company it is, tweet them or ping off an email if you can be bothered, or if you can't, email me and I'll do it, because I'm getting really angry about it. And I've been contacted by lots of readers with different websites that have been irritating them.
Time is short, though. But what are you talking about? 30 seconds to read these boxes? These companies make it so easy to buy stuff from them so quickly. Just take a few moments to realise that actually you're paying for that speed in other ways. And it may be the fact that you're not looking, you're so conditioned to not read properly. Just read the boxes. Empower yourself. Anyway, finally, to this. And I've honestly, Lee, never let me go on holiday. Yes, I'm expecting fights in the studio now. Well, not really, but this is over cashback sites. Who knew they could be so controversial? Now, Lee, it is fair to say, does not like them. If it's not right, Lee, you can apologise to us for lying over the past 3 years of this podcast.
I'm not the biggest fan of them.
You're not the biggest fan.
Yep.
All right, so we'll stick you in the blue corner. And in the red corner, Rachel, to rub his nose in it, has dedicated a whole article extolling their benefits. So before I get you to take your positions and defend your views, Rachel, in as neutral way as possible, what is a cashback site and how does it work?
A cashback site, Georgie, is a fabulous, wonderful...
Now, you're not allowed to do that, Rachel. That's okay. Cheating. That's cheating.
Okay, right, okay. In all seriousness, it's a website that when you click through it to make a purchase online, it gives you a little bit of, wait for it, cashback. It could be a lump sum, up to sometimes hundreds of pounds, or it could be a percentage of the amount that you've spent. You may wonder, why on earth would people give you money for spending on stuff that you were going to buy anyway? And it is this. Companies spend a lot of money trying to get you to go to their website and buy stuff. And they spend this money on all sorts of different advertisers, lots of different routes through online and offline. And one of the providers that they are happy to pay are cashback websites. But cashback websites are different from other advertisers. They say, do you know what? Instead of just taking all the money from the retailers to say thanks very much for directing customers to our website, we're going to share that money with you, the consumer. So there's Quidco and Top Cashback are the two main ones. And they will share the money that they have received with you in the form of either a percentage or just a nice healthy lump sum. That money You can just...
Okay, right. Well, we're going to get on to you. Okay, now you can tell us why you love them. So that's factually... Is that fair enough, Lee? She said exactly what happens and how they work. Yeah. Right, okay. So, Rachel, you have a minute now to tell us why you particularly love them. Go.
I love them because I quite like free money. And I've accrued £240 of it. Admittedly, it's taken me a couple of years, but I'm not very good at cashback websites. I forget a lot of the time. There are people who have commented on my article saying they're up £6,000, £3,000, a lot of money.
Bear in mind, they have to be shopping online. Sorry, I've just cut into your minute here. But to earn that money, you have to buy stuff, right?
Well, I mean, the trick here is to only buy stuff that you were going to buy anyway. And a lot of the time it is just, you know, a couple of percentage points here and there. But the real big earners are things like if you're switching utility providers, gas, electricity, broadband, they're the whoppers, actually. And if you shop around, as we're supposed to apparently every year, then that can really start to add up. And I've got to say, I don't really mind having, when it comes around every year, to have to switch providers and do all that kind of stuff. I'm happy to be the person in the household. I say, oh, don't worry, I'll do that one. I'll do the switching. And everyone's ever so grateful. But it's because I get 50 quid every time I do it. It's a nice little extra bonus incentive. And if you are someone who, say, has just moved house and you have to do all of that stuff anyway, it does add up.
I have to say, from my recent holiday, Lee, I managed to get back £80 by going through, Expedia.
Had you shopped around everywhere? Was it the cheapest price? You didn't just go there for the cashback?
No, not at all. I don't really online shop that much anyway, but I'm actually up about £300 this year on mine. So I have to say, I quite like it. Mm. Obviously, because like you, Rachel, I like free cash and have just banked £100. So, Lee... It sounds great.
Can I just say, anyone listening to this, last weekend you had Mayweather, McGregor. This weekend you've got a fight over cashback.
With Lee and Rachel.
The excitement.
Absolutely. At the bargain price of... Yeah, Lee, so go on.
No, I've never been a big fan of these cashback websites. I've always wondered, there must be, you know, I'm very much in the opinion of you don't get things in life for free. You know, some things are just too good to be true. Where does this sort of free money come from? Now, what I will say is I will rewind a little bit, and I did read Rachel's story, and it was a very interesting explainer of how cashback works and how it's to do with advertising and how they're sharing some of this advertising cost with people, which, you know, at the end of the day, if you are shopping somewhere specifically and you've got this cashback, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I've always been in the opinion that someone somewhere is paying for it, and somehow it's almost like loyalty cards at supermarkets and things, right? I always think that things are just probably, if they didn't have those loyalty cards, things would probably just be a little bit cheaper in the supermarket. And that's how I've always felt a little bit about cashback. I just don't understand how you're just getting free money, how you're getting hundreds and thousands over the years. It just, something just doesn't quite add up to me. But look, as I say, if you are already something like a holiday, right, if you're paying 500 quid and that is the cheapest price, you've looked everywhere and you can't find it anywhere else, and then you also factor in with a cashback, then it's not necessarily a bad thing. And at the end of the day, that's a bit of spending money while you're abroad, which is pretty nice considering how much the pound has crashed against the euro. So I get it, but...
But you don't. You're not convinced.
I'm not convinced. I'm sceptical.
Rachel, come back to his argument.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm with you on everything else. I'm so wary of loyalty. I agree, you get nothing for nothing, and often the thing that you are giving away that you don't realise it's your data. Mm-hmm. Somehow, I just have a soft spot for cashback. I think it's the £240, and that I do understand the business model, and it doesn't seem like it's anything that's ripping off anyone else, or I'm inadvertently doing something terrible to myself either. It seems kind of all right to me. And the other thing that puts people off is they think, oh, what a faff it's going to be. But, I mean, how long has it taken you to make up your few hundred quid? It's nothing.
9 months,
you
it
just
has.
Sort of have to remember to do it. And that's it.
Yes.
No, Lee, why don't... I can see an article here. Come on, Lee, try it out and then let us know in about 9 months' time.
But you know, Josh, I really don't do much shopping online. I really don't. Holidays...
What about Mrs. Boyce?
Yeah, quite possibly, but yeah. Even then we don't really do an awful lot online.
Oh, there's an article in this somewhere. There's an article in this somewhere. Well, do let us know your views. Also, let us know your views if you like our podcast. Rate us on iTunes. Tell your friends and family. Join in the conversation. It does really help. You can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. Thank you very much to Personal Finance Editor Rachel Rickard-Strauss and Consumer Affairs Editor Lee Boyce.
This is Money. Brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security, backed by HM Treasury.